This is Down to Brass Tacks.
Good day to you, Mr. Ellis.
Yes, good day.
I am calling in respect of the concern, I should say, observation, first of all, made by a female caller to Sergeant Siebert Johnson, which she repeated in respect of the use of cell phones by police officers.
Yes.
That she would have made an observation. And then your recent caller, forgive the noise interruption, I'll try to minimize it.
No,
your recent caller speaking to it being unfair, etc., to have that be done. Just 1 minute, please. Yes, sir. I was saying to you.
Yes.
That to respond directly to the caller to your program more than a few minutes ago, but you know what I'm talking about.
Mm-hmm.
The road traffic regulations of the North Barbados 2017, as amended, sets out at section 148A, 148D, etc.
Mm-hmm.
Rules on the prohibition on driving or operating a vehicle while holding or using a cell phone. And Mr. Johnson would have been repeatedly warning the public against doing such because 148.1 says no person shall drive or operate a vehicle on a road or highway while doing those things. Shall is mandatory, so it's completely prohibited. And then at section 148.2, the offense is created, again in defense of Mr. Johnson. The fine as stipulated in this regulation is cited as $2,000 or to imprisonment for a term of 18 months or more. And there's more in terms of use of hands-free devices permitted at 148. It sets the conditions out. And at 2 and 3, that is also attended to. Now, critically, to the caller's point, there's always an exception to every rule in law. Or usually it's for purposes best known by the state. In this case, the exception to Regulation 148 and 148B is found at 148C1, and it spells out at 2. For the purposes of this regulation, emergency vehicle means A, an ambulance, B, a police vehicle, C, a unit of the Barbados Defense Force, D, a unit of the Department of Emergency Management, E, a unit of the Fire Service, or F, a unit of the prison service. Further to that, at 32.3, as amended, there's a definition for each category of those government department vehicles. So let me address the police one. In this regulation, police vehicle means, and I quote, any vehicle used for conveying members of the police force in the execution of their duties, or being driven by any member of the police force in the execution of their duty. And that takes me back to the originating point that the lady made to Mr. Johnson. I am submitting that for that lady to make such a statement to Mr. Johnson or to query Mr. Johnson in respect of that practice. It suggests to me a reasonable inference can be drawn that she would have seen a person or persons whom, based on their appearance, that is to say, the vehicle and the uniform, that she reasonably believed that person was a member of the force who was using his or her cell phone. And I said that to say that it's clear that that person would have standing and the exception rule would apply to that person in the execution of the duty. Mm-hmm. Now, we don't know what type of duty. Well, I know from Barry State that policemen do use their cell phones in the execution of their duty,
yeah,
or duties extensively,
mm-hmm,
and for a good cause. Equally so, the emergency management personnel and those other category of persons.
Yeah.
So we want to reassure the public that these are not willy-nilly use of cell phones by our officers where they go off on a frolic of their own doing such, but that when you see the police in uniform, or not necessarily uniform, but all police officers, all police vehicles, that there's good and justifiable cause, usually not known to you, the members of the public. And I would invite the gentleman and the lady to access the Road Traffic Regulations Amendment 2017 for their ease of reference and general information. I thank you for your time.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time and explaining this and what the law says on this particular point. Somebody suggested to me that I am pretty antsy this morning, but I didn't think so. I
didn't think so either. And I
don't understand.
Put it in the context frame, though, in fairness to you.
Pardon?
you got the call, you sought to disabuse the call of mine of any bias or prejudice or malicious intent on the part of this exception, okay. In fairness to you.
Thank you very much.
You sought to bring balance to it.
Well, I tried to do that, but you know, one of the issues that you face is that you come in here in the morning and you will find some callers. Thank you very much, sir. You find some callers who are a little bit more aggressive than others. I mean, I would like to think that in the main, we treat people fairly and, you know, we listen to what people have to say. However, there are some people who basically step over the line. And once you bowl a no ball, I'm going to have to call it. So I'm not setting out here to be more antsy than normal, but I'm not going to let anybody ride roughshod over me and over you as listeners, because I have people who are reacting to some of this stuff that goes on, you know, and I don't share with you everything that people say here. But this one says, some of us listeners are sick and tired of Alvin and the Stats Man with their biased talk on politics. We are more interested in everyday life instead of past politics. If the other station is willing to have him talk nonsense, please tell him go there and speak ad infinitum. And that's just an example of what is coming to me on WhatsApp. So while one person is saying to me, oh, let the man talk, you're always interrupting this and that, then there are other people who say to me, I'm like, I'm sick and tired of that. You know, this is not what the calling program is supposed to be about. It is to deal with the issues. People want to talk about how what they see on social media with the people who went into Roy Smith's shop and you know, with the brandishing a gun and that sort of thing, and where crime is in this country at the moment. You know, the people are concerned about the fact that so many people are still struggling out there to deal with the effects of COVID. Can't find work, and you know, there are other things that are relevant to people's existence. I talked to somebody last night who is into the arts, and she was explaining what life has been like for people like her coming out of the lockdown, and even now trying to make a living because the area in which the person specialized has been severely impacted by COVID-19. And the fact that people are reluctant to engage in certain activities. There are a lot of people out there who are struggling and don't know what next is coming at them. We are into the last quarter of this year. We are going to have a COVID Christmas. What is that going to be like? How is it shaping up all like now? Some people look forward to independence. What is that likely to be? All of this is here for us to discuss. And yes, politics is part of, you know, our existence, but that has to be balanced against other interests in this country. This person says that there is too much talk about the show and the station, and more time should be spent on the issues. So that's where I come into conflict with one or two callers, because I'm more concerned about the things that are happening in Barbados. If you really have a problem with how the show is being run and that sort of thing, I can talk to you off air. But I want to avoid this environment in which, and there are two callers who have been doing this repeatedly. And I've said it in the past, I've given them a little bit of latitude in recent weeks. But I've said, this is not the place for that kind of discussion. And you're not calling the radio station to tell us how to run it. You know, if you want to make an input, you know, call us off the air. I'll listen to you anytime. But let's deal with the issues, things that are of concern to people. We're trying to find solutions to problems in this country, giving us a sense of what is happening in your life. How are the policies of government and the behavior of businesses impacting on you as individuals? And what are your recommendations and ideas for trying to improve the situation? The situation here with the children and schooling, how is that working out for you? All of this is available for us to talk about. Welcome to Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air. Hello? Hello?
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. Very good morning.
Yes, good morning.
It's good to hear you folks after many attempts. Firstly, just a few things I wanted to address. One has to do with Brother Ellis. About two Fridays ago, you were dealing with two ex-prisoners. I don't know if you remember.
Yes.
Yeah, and I did send an email. I would like to help in some small way. I don't know if you know me, but I happen to be an Anglican priest. I live in New York, and we have in my small congregation, we have a program called the Barnabas Second Chance Program.
The what? The Barnabas?
Barnabas. Yeah. On the story of Paul and Barnabas and the Acts of the Apostles,
mm-hmm.
where it was Barnabas who gave Paul a chance after he was converted, and he tried to get into the church and so on, and they didn't want to receive him, but it was Barnabas who introduced him to the church, and of course, with tremendous results. This program is a small program, and we try to reach out to ex-prisoners, ex-prostitutes, and people who are deportees. And we've had some success. A few weeks ago, there was an article in the newspaper about this prostitute who was stabbed several times, and she was saying that she wanted to get off the streets, but she just needed a chance, some help. So I reached out to her through my church. I reached out to her and contacted her. In fact, there were two of them, and we were able to get them off the streets. We paid the rent arrears. We paid rent up to the end of August, and we gave them some cash to buy groceries and so on, and we set them up, and they're now they're vendors. They're selling drinks, selling snacks and so on, and popcorns and so on, but they're on their feet, so to speak.
Yes,
they're on their feet to success, and I've offered one of them wanted to complete her a course she was doing at the, I think the community college as an auxiliary nurse, and she needed the funds, so we're helping her with that. Another one said she wanted a machine to help her to make some masks and so on to sell. So I'm saying that this program, they said it's small. Now, getting back to your interview with these, I think there were two guys. I actually sent a message on WhatsApp, giving you my number. They can call me to see what we can do to help them. We don't just hand out cash to people. What we do is say, well, look, what skills do you have? Did you acquire any skills while you were in prison, for example, or... if you had a few thousand dollars to set up a business of your own, what would you do? And maybe we'll give people sort of startup help. That's the whole idea of the program.
Would you care to identify yourself?
Oh, my name is, if you want to be former Reverend Canon Dr. G. Llewellyn Armstrong.
Okay.
Yeah, just Llewellyn Armstrong. An old Barbadian priest who just loves Barbados, and I love to listen to the brass, Dunker Brass Stacks. I have some wonderful occasions to laugh and so on.
You're calling us from New York right now?
Yeah, from Brooklyn, New York. I'm calling from Brooklyn, New York. Yeah.
Great. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Now, you're an Anglican priest, and you speak about the project that you are involved in where in Brooklyn. However, what about the idea of twinning with one of the churches here in Barbados?
Well, if you have time, that's a very good question. In fact, I would suggest, I wrote an article which appeared in Barbados Today, and when you have time, you can Google it, on August 11th this year, and it's entitled For Love of Church. For Love of Church. And in that article, I suggested that this kind of ministry, outreach ministry, is what the Anglican Church in Barbados should be doing. You know, I made the point that gone are the days when, and I served as a priest in Barbados for many years. I came to the States in 1975. And I ministered at the cathedral and St. Augustine's and so on. But gone are the days when status mattered in the church. I mean, when I was a priest in Barbados, I mean, to be an Anglican priest, you had status. But now it is about mission. And one of the outreach programs that the church can undertake, and, you know, you ask the question, and this is my response to that question. I think the Anglican Church would do a wonderful job just reaching out. Look, I feel so embarrassed when I go home. And I don't mean to be critical of the bishop or of the diocese or whatever. I'm a lifelong Anglican, and I love the church, and I love Barbados and so on. But I see so many of the rectories, for example, falling down. You know, that whole issue with Bishop's Court was a terrible thing. And then that was followed by the issue body found in St. Gabriel's building and so on.
But isn't that a money issue? Isn't that about the
I'm
money?
Sorry?
Isn't that because the church just doesn't have the resources to be able to maintain the buildings? And I want to bring you to even this period with COVID, where the churches have been severely impacted because for quite some time people could not get out to church, and therefore they couldn't get, you know, the support that they needed. So I get the distinct impression that the Anglican Church in particular is under tremendous financial pressure.
Yeah, point well taken. And that point I considered in my article that I mentioned. But here is an important point. Faith. And then I'm talking about before COVID-19 came, you know, on the scene. This has been going on for years. Yes, it's an issue of money. But I do believe that if some of those buildings before, I mean, while they were still up and functional, just vacant, if they were offered, for example, to ex-prisoners for programs, you know, educational programs, some of those folks, you know, themselves would help to keep those buildings in good repair.
But, you
and
know,
I don't believe again. Sorry?
It is said that the longest journey begins with one step. And
exactly.
When I asked you just now about twinning, you moved from the concept of twinning with another church in Barbados to what the diocese should be doing. But that doesn't stop you from linking up with a church in Barbados to start that process. So what has stopped you?
Okay, it hasn't stopped me. A church in Barbados that moves another, takes me to another program. St. Bartholomew's Church. You should know St. Bartholomew's. It's the first building you come to when you leave the airport. That's my home church. That's where I was baptized, I was confirmed, I was married. And
this church is celebrating 190 years or something like that?
Exactly. So what I have done to that church, I've started, and this is personal, I've started an Armstrong Memorial Scholarship Fund, which is available to youngsters primarily from St. Bartholomew's Church.
But this is that's not the same as the outreach to the prostitutes and to the convicts?
It is outreach, but this one is personal. The prostitutes and the ex-convicts and so on, that program is through my church. The one, the scholarship fund is a personal fund to which I contribute $500 every month. And it is there available to, especially to children, needy children, because there was a time when I was poor as well, you know.
Yeah.
I was poor in that. And the Anglican Church, especially St. Bartholomew's, made me who I am today as a priest.
Well, Canon Armstrong, we talk about the Barbados end of it, but in Brooklyn, what is the you call it the Episcopalian Church, I believe, and that's what they call it in Britain, in the U.S.
The Episcopal Church.
Now,
yeah.
What are the challenges that you are facing there? Are they similar to what we are facing here?
Yeah, very, very similar. Very similar. And we exercise that ministry here on a, I want to emphasize, on a small scale, because my congregation is a small congregation. I mean, I'm a retired, I'm 84 years old. I retired from the Episcopal Church, and, you know, so we have this congregation consisting primarily of Barbadians. But to answer your question, the challenges are here also. And we have been, I mean, I don't want to mention names, but we've been able to help someone who, he didn't end up in prison, but this is a Barbadian guy who got into some very serious trouble. And had an issue with the law, and we reached out to him because one of the requirements was he was put on probation. One of the requirements was that he should have a job, and so on. And we were able to give him a job, help him to get back on his feet.
Understood.
And so on and so forth. So
yeah, but you see, my concern here is beyond this outreach that you're doing. And, you know, it's interesting to hear the approach that you have adopted. But if you say to me that the church in Brooklyn is facing the same kind of financial challenges that the church in Barbados is facing, how then are you all coping with that? Because you need money to be able to run the kind of program that you're talking about. So where is that funding coming from?
It's coming from the contributions of members. And as I said, it's a small program, but you've got to begin somewhere. Because I feel that if you can help at least one person, who will help others? So again, to get back to answer your question, yes. I mean, for example, I'm a pensioner, but from my pension, you know, I'm able to help because I got to pay back. I got to give back to the Barbados that made me.
All right.
You know, so there are people who are generous, and people have money, and I tell you, we are not able to meet, okay, in a church because of the
pandemic
rules and regulations.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but people send checks. They send checks to us. In fact, I find that we get real contributions now, you know, because I have a conference worship program every Sunday night where we have prayers and we have Bible discussions and so on. And people, I have something like 35 people, between 35 and 40 people every Sunday night.
Okay.
Including people from Barbados.
Yeah.
But people would send their contributions. So it's from those contributions that have increased that we are able to reach out to Barbadians.
Well, thank you very much for taking the time and calling us, and keep listening to Down to Brass Tacks and feeding back to us, okay?
Yeah, I was saying just one last point. Hello?
Yes, I'm here.
Yeah. On Monday, I published an article in the Nation entitled "A Solution for Same-Sex Equation," and it was a response really to the whole issue of the same-sex discussion, which I find very, very interesting. But the point, very briefly, the point that I made was, the recommendation was that they should have a referendum on same-sex marriages first. That should be the first step. And I know that Barbados would not approve of that. And the second step would be to have, you know, for the government to provide an opportunity for same-sex unions to have the same rights and privileges as the regular heterosexual unions. But it's just a few days ago on Monday that I wrote it.
Okay, sir. Thank you very much. We got to go. This person writes, I don't want to call him because my voice is known. I'm a young man. I grew up poor. I knew education is the way out of poverty. I thank God for former Prime Minister Owen Arthur, who said, a graduate per household. I was the first person who is a graduate in my household. I've pursued education as my way out. I did various other certificates outside of my degree and can't find a job. I even went as far as telling an MP, I will pick up garbage if I have to. I don't care. It is a foot in a door. And I will let my work speak for itself. But employers are interested in experience. What would you say to this young person, this young man, who says that notwithstanding his certification, he just can't find a job in Barbados? This is Down to Brass Tacks. Hello? You're on the air at 11:40. Hello? Are you hearing us? Welcome Hello? To the program. Yes.
Hi. Yeah, morning. Are you hearing me?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, okay. I must commend Reverend Armstrong there for his input. Very laudable. But I want to commend you equally for the stance you've taken latterly here in the program about solutions and not all of this carrying on. Look, something was raised this week in Barbados about the MRI or last week, the MRI machine. You could be imagining, excuse me please, that nobody will call and follow up on that and try to bring some perspective as regarding the urgency of an MRI machine to the QEH. It is things like that that I think you would want to discuss and hear solutions and suggestions. Am I wrong in saying this?
Well, I'm open to people raising various topics. I wouldn't say that you have to pursue that, but there are other things that, you know, people want to hear.
That was only one that I heard.
Discussion on.
But there's several. You can expect, I think, that that's the only one. There's several. The point I am thinking about, the train that you would want to see, preferably then BLP, DLP.
But you need to start the process by talking about something other than that.
But I've spoken about the MRI machine in the week, and I'm now speaking about it afresh. So you don't understand.
This person says to me that with all the protocols in place in this country and with COVID-19, they are saying that the frontline workers are having to beg, and the person says, and I mean beg, for face masks. The person says, my department said there are no masks available. What are we supposed to do? When management keeps the masks at headquarters in Warrens, and we assigned to the Grantley Adams International Airport have to be passengers. Management has a policy that we cannot approach them to voice your concerns without the boss reacting in a negative way, says this person. I mean, this is their account of what they believe is happening. I don't know specifically which department they're talking about.
It's not acceptable.
But, the issue, it's unacceptable, but, you know, to a large extent, sometimes these things, you know, you're waiting for masks to come, people are making them. Sometimes the funding may not be readily available. And this raises the question, if I'm working in a place, and there are many people who work in organizations that do not provide masks.
Mm.
So you have to go and get your own mask. There are a lot of people in Barbados who do that. So if you are to protect your own health,
mm-hmm.
you're going to take the initiative to do so.
And get your own mask.
Get your own mask. How much a mask costs these days? Well,
$2.
$20, $15.
You get $2 a mask. You get a pack of those, the mask they call it surgical mask, the blue mask. Five, ten a pack, $2 per mask. You get five or ten in a pack. Yeah, so I pack for $10, $15, and you get 10 of them, or however, $2 a mask. So
this person says that they're frustrated to the max.
But they must be. The thing is, I have been saying for years, some of the worst things you could ever make a mistake and do, and one would be like putting authority in the wrong person's hand. Oh my, there's nothing more grave and dirty than that. You know what it is with people that abuse authority and the boss, bring all of them to headquarters, do this, do that. I resent that vehemently with a passion. It certainly infuriates me. That's when God try to contain myself. But there's foolishness, you know. I just can't contain them sort of things. Authority abuse is unacceptable. And some people like to know. I'm the boss. I said, bring them here. That kind of thing.
How do you correct that?
Huh?
How do you correct that?
How you correct it?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you can tell how you correct that. Mm-hmm. For some of them, they're abusing authority.
That's not the first approach to dealing with a problem, right? Huh? You very well have to have. Well, when you have a situation like that, the sensitization is important. You know, that sometimes you have to put people through a process that says, you know, this is how you're coming across, and then, and this is how you're supposed to react in these circumstances. You know, a lot of people begin from the premise that, you know, I don't make the sport, you know.
Uh-huh.
I tell people what I got to say up front and
mm-hmm.
that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
You put people like that in responsible positions, if they take that attitude, it can spell disaster in trying to get things done.
But I am saying that, first to begin with, you have to be rationally sound. And you can evaluate situations as they arise and go through them methodically and come out to something that's acceptable. You can't conclude and come up with a solution that's unacceptable, because it has to be catering to as many person or persons as possible when you make that definitive or conclusion.
If a person operates from the premise that I really don't care.
You're rational.
I don't care what anybody says. This is me. This is how I've made up.
But that's irrational.
And nobody is going to be able to change me.
That's irrational.
And then that person is put in a responsible position where you have to be interacting with people and getting and motivating people to achieve objectives. You cannot necessarily win that way. And there are a lot of people in this country who will tell you that. This is how I am. You can't change me. So that's how it is.
But you don't have people to go on courses. You go on a familiarization course. You send people to course day in and day out about decorum and rationale and about helping and about all this. I mean, all that is in Maxwell Pond and gone to waste. We sense that spending all that energy. There's one that they were trying to tout name. Help me there, man. The gentleman that is now retired. The lady that
ran public sector reform.
Yes, and all this thing. Oh, so what you were telling me in short, all of that effort gone to Maxwell Pond. You mean people ain't getting it better? Yeah. That's where we're going to deploy of us going to be that. You're going to suffer this indignance and kind of, I don't know. I don't know. Sometimes it's got me like, will it get better? Really? I don't know. I hope that thing
but here,
out. I regard it.
These are the challenges that people face. This person says education is the way out of poverty. But they say, my son has a degree in economics and political science and a master's in international business. And when he applies for any job, he is told he is overqualified and he has no work experience. So So what does a person in that position do? How many of you are facing this kind of challenge out there in this society today? Heavily qualified, but cannot find a job. Down to brass tacks. 4341790. Hello.
Morning, David. How are you doing?
Morning. I'm okay. And you?
I am pretty all right. I just called on two topics. One, crime, and the other one, COVID-19.
Yes.
The question is, why does this current administration refuse to use what we have on the statute book to tackle crime? There's a piece of legislation which states that police officers are allowed to cordon off areas for as much as 48 hours, and it must be signed by, I think, as a judge or a magistrate, this warrant to do searches for things like illegal drugs and persons who are wanted and all that, and for guns and ammunition, which are a hot button topic. And for some unknown reason, or reason best known to them, this current administration refuses to use that piece of legislation. And it could be used fairly, not just to target those who are in the housing areas or the lower echelons of society, but those in the heights and terraces. It would be intelligence-driven policing. And I believe that would make a difference. Persons would not randomly go by a funeral and shoot up the place if they knew that the police could cordon off the entire Nelson Street area where that occurred and let nobody in and nobody out until those guns are found.
I wonder, how do you feel about the crime situation in the country right now? Down to brass tacks.